Now, joining me live on the line is Master Cobbler, ex-boxer and pigeon fancier Tony Ingle. Good morning, Tony. How are you? And thank you for joining us here on Northside today on Near FM 90.3. How are you this morning, Tony?
I'm very well, thank God.
Good. Can you hear me okay?
I can hear you very well.
Great. Tony, now you are a master cobbler, a pigeon fancier, yes, and an ex-boxer. But first of all, you're actually in work at the moment in your small business in Kimmage, and you are a very busy man. And can you tell our listeners all about how you started out your career as a master cobbler all those years ago? I think you were around 12 years old. Is that right?
No, I was 8.
8?
Yeah.
My goodness.
And my brother-in-law, he had a business down in Charlemagne Street in the basement, and I used to go up to him after school to paint the shoes and sometimes deliver them. And when I became 13, I just went straight into work. I left school on Friday. I was working on Monday. And I've been working ever since. 70 years.
70 years.
Working.
And do you mind telling our listeners what age group you are?
I'm 78, 79 in next July.
My goodness, there's not many people who can say that they're still working at 78. And I think you work really hard. You work 6 days a week, is that right? Your shop is actually open 6 days a week.
It's open 6 days, yeah. Yeah.
My goodness. And the shop is based in Kimmage, is that right?
It's in Kimmage, yes.
Excellent. And are you busy, Tony? Because I understand that that is, you know, you hear these stories of small businesses closing down because of, obviously, the global pandemic had a dreadful impact on small businesses. But to sustain the work that you do, is it a busy trade, or how is it at the moment for you?
It's busy enough at the minute, but in COVID, the landlord was very, very good, and he gave us an exemption on the rent, which was, it would have been closed up if he hadn't have done that, we were gone out of business.
Oh God!
And fair play to him, he was very, very good.
Isn't it great to have good people behind you and to
Absolutely.
Allow you to continue on to do your work?
Yes.
Yeah, that's amazing. And if anybody has, you know, you call yourself a tree surgeon, isn't that, or a shoe surgeon, not a tree
surgeon.
Sorry, a shoe surgeon. So tell our listeners exactly what you do in the shop.
Anything, you know, from putting shoes back together again when they're in bits, and if you look at the website, you'll see all the stuff that's been restored.
Right.
We restore everything, really.
Okay. So if I have a pair of shoes that I really love, you can basically refurbish them and make them like new. Is that right?
We do our best to do that. Yes. We don't say perfect, but as near as perfect as possible.
Of course, nothing is perfect in this life. Apologies, yes. And yeah. You also had to kind of reinvent yourself because of, you know, like I look at people's shoes. I love shoes myself, and I look and see a lot of people are wearing, you know, it's trainers, it's these white runners are very popular. And you reinvented yourself, and you actually purchased a machine that can turn those white trainers into brands. Sparkly box ready shoes again. Tell us
about
that.
Yeah, we do that, yeah. Mm. It's very, very good. You know, it's actually steam cleaning them.
Right.
And then we put new laces in them, and they look absolutely brilliant when they do go out.
And that you sanitize them as well, so they're,
oh, absolutely. Yeah.
Yeah, and
yeah.
They smell good because they often stink,
yes,
to high heaven. I don't envy you with the job, you know, handling people's dirty shoes. I don't mind.
I've been doing it for the past 60 years, so it doesn't make any 70 years, it doesn't make any difference.
Gosh,
you get used to it.
Yeah, you're amazing. Now, I also would like to, so if anybody would like their shoes repaired by Tony, I'm sure there's not a lot of people doing it now, or am I wrong?
No, very few.
Right.
Absolutely. There used to be, every area had four or five of them. From Cork Street to Dolphin's Barn, there was five.
Right.
In Charlemagne Street to Richmond Street, there was seven. There's one. There's none in as you say, Cork Street to Rialto. There's none. And there used to be four here. There's just myself. There used to be five in Terranure. There's none. So you'd count them on your hands, how many shoe repairs now is in Dublin. There's a few.
Okay, what about over the north side? I know there's Max in Fairview there.
Yeah, there's Max in Fairview. He's the only one, I think, in Fairview. And then there's one on Talbot Street. and then there's Tara Letters.
Oh yes,
and,
yeah.
And then there's one in Cabra as well.
Okay,
you know,
but very,
and there's
very
one in Rathmines and Charlemagne Street.
Okay.
My nephew is in Charlemagne Street, Isaac's Place.
Okay, excellent. So a family business going strong. And Tony, I'd like to speak to you, if I may, about your very special hobby. It's such an interesting thing to talk about, and it's very topical at the moment. You are a pigeon fancier. So
yes.
This was classed as, you know, a kind of a working man's hobby. But seemingly, Queen Elizabeth, who just passed away, had quite a collection of racing pigeons, and her grandson gave us this information on, I don't know whether you watched it or not, but I'm sure our listeners have, the I'm a Celebrity, Get Me Out of Here, and he said that she has a fabulous collection of racing pigeons. And how we found this out is that he was asked a question about pigeons, can you tell us what a pigeon blank is, and he said enthusiast, but he got it wrong. And the answer is fancier. So that's what I'm going to call you, a pigeon fancier. Do you know how that name came about? And tell us about your extraordinary
it's
hobby.
A pigeon fan. Yeah, because he fancy pigeons, you know.
The feathered kind.
You never have a, you know, you'll never, your wife always knows where you are. You're out in the backyard.
Oh, hilarious.
You're always in the backyard.
Okay, very, you know, good. So tell us about your, and that, again, you started off this hobby as a very young boy with your dad, Charles Ingle.
Yeah, my father, he started off in 1911, and he won his first race in 1911. And he's actually still winning today, because I still have him down as Anthony Ingle and Charles Ingle.
Wow.
So he's still winning races, even though he's dead for the past 40 years.
Oh, gosh. That's, you know, amazing. And you've kept it up in his honour, which is such a lovely thing to do. And I believe you are the best in the business, Tony, at winning all the races. And you won a big race last August. Tell us about that race and where
the
pigeons...
It was a race from Skibbereen.
From Skibbereen,
and,
okay.
And the pigeon I put in, he came first open, beating everybody in Dublin, you know. And it was a fantastic achievement, you know, to beat them all, you know.
And
she beat them by 4 yards per minute.
Wow. And it was a female pigeon.
It was, yeah.
And what was her
brilliant
name?
I call her Amelia, after my granddaughter.
Ah, isn't that gorgeous? And does Amelia like pigeons?
Oh, she, not really. Alexandra does. Her,
your
her
grandchild.
Sister.
And maybe she'll take over the pigeon fancying now.
Not at all. No chance.
And
no
who will chance. Take it over, Tony, when you've had
nobody.
Enough?
Nobody. When I pack it up, it's gone.
Right. Okay.
You know, after 110 years.
My goodness. It's a laborious job, I suppose, the cleaning.
It's a labour of love. If you love it, grand. If you don't, waste the time.
It's all or nothing, is it?
Oh, absolutely. You can't be halfway in it.
Okay,
you
now
have to either do it or give it up, one of the two.
Okay, and how many pigeons would you have had over your lifetime?
Oh, I don't know. I really don't know.
In the loft?
Lots of them, yeah. You see, age takes care of them all as well. And then hawks, falcons, birds of prey, cats, weasels, pine martens, just all sorts of predators around, and you've got to make sure that you have your place locked up and that nothing gets in.
Right, yeah, that's important, that they're looked after and minded, and they
they're minded like babies. They're,
really?
They're vaccinated, they're wormed, their pigeon loft is unbelievable. People were calling them rats of disguise. If they seen the pigeons the way they were kept, they would change their mind, because they're like racehorses of the sky.
Right. Okay, and they require a lot of work and tender, loving care.
Oh, absolutely. They have to be.
Yes, and there is a new movie out called The Million Dollar Pigeon. I don't know whether you know about this, but Gavin...
I didn't see it.
Okay, will you go and see it?
I will indeed, yes.
Do you know about it?
I just heard about it, yes.
Okay, so it's about a pigeon race in South Africa, and Gavin Fitzgerald directed it, and it features a pigeon fancier called John O'Brien from Clondalkin. Would you be familiar with John?
Yes, yeah. These are called one-loft races. It's you send a team of pigeons to South Africa, and they put them in. It's not like a house race. It's a community race. Everybody sends pigeons from all over the world: America, Canada, Kuwait, the United Arab Emirates, Ireland, England, Scotland, Wales, and they put them all into one loft in South Africa. And they settle them down, vaccinate them, clean them, make sure everything is right with them, and then they train them. And it's at the last race, I think it's 350 kilometers, and whoever wins it, it's $1 million.
Oh my goodness.
African dollars, I think it is, or whatever.
Okay. And have you ever thought of entering that race at all?
No.
Okay, why not?
I haven't. I don't know. I've just never. I like to do my own thing with the pigeons. I think I just like to see what I'm doing myself.
Yes, yeah. You know? You're just in it for you.
Yeah, I'm not, I love it for the hobby that it is. It's becoming a very, very money orientated hobby, you know, and I'm not into that. I just like to raise pigeons.
Yeah, I'm glad you said that, because that is actually the way it's going. The you know, the working class man, it's turning into a very rich feed.
Yeah, I just race them for the enjoyment of it. A lot of people have them and they want to make money out of them. We were never that way, my father and myself, and all my friends, they were never like that. Okay. They just love to race pigeons.
Yes, okay. And I have a fun fact here about pigeons. They were the first animal to be domesticated over 5,000 years ago. It's fascinating.
Well, they went back to Noah's time, mm-hmm. when the place was flooded. There was a dove sent out, and he came back with a twig, and that's how they knew that the water had subsided.
Wow.
So that's from the Ark.
That's really interesting.
That's how they knew that the water had receded.
Okay. Wow, brilliant. And Tony, when does the pigeon racing season start? Is that all year long, or is it a certain time of year?
It's a certain time of the year. It starts in April and finishes in September.
Okay. And in the meantime, do you just care for them and look after them and get them ready for these? Do you breed them as well?
Yes.
Okay.
And what happens in the off season, from September right up to December, they get a whole new coat. Like the trees lose all their leaves,
yes.
And then they get new leaves in the summertime, where the pigeons start losing their feathers from September, and they go into a heavy molt, and then they start losing all their secondaries and primaries, and they can't really fly, so you don't let them out. But they have a whole new coat, you know, for the next year.
Right.
They renew every feather on the body, from tail to primaries to the body feathers, coverts, everything.
So do they...
Every feather is renewed.
Okay, and so that means a lot of work for you, cleaning that out and gathering all that together, I'm sure, in your loft.
Yeah, you have to have a hoover. I have a hoover, which is grand. Clean
right.
It all up and take up the heavy feathers,
yes.
You know, with your hand. But the hoover is great for taking all the dust out of it.
And that's another reason why, I suppose, it's probably dying out for just the ordinary person, is to have the room to have a loft in your back garden. You know, not a lot of people have access to a garden anymore. So
no.
I understand how it's difficult to carry on this hobby, this love of your life, Tony.
Yeah, this is why, you know, there's no kids coming into it. It's
right.
Very hard. It's a lifelong work. It's like a farm. You have to make sure that the birds are perfect. You've got to make sure they're healthy. You've got to make sure they're looked after. They're like children.
Yes.
If you don't look after them, they deteriorate.
Okay.
And you've got to look after them. And this is what's wrong with... There's no gardens now suitable for pigeons, unless you live down the country. And county councils don't want to know anything about it. But there again, that's just the way it is. Where years ago... nobody had anything, and pigeon racing was a fantastic hobby for keeping people together and socialising with one another. And now that is gone. You know, nobody talks to anybody anymore. which the pigeon racing was fantastic. The camaraderie that, you know, we had. I have still friends that I grew up with. Bob Allen, Kevin Burney, Jimmy Toner. These are all in their 70s, 80s and 85s. And they still race pigeons.
Amazing.
And it's brilliant. Yeah.
It's your men's shed, really.
It's what?
It's your men's shed. You know, they talk about men's club, your little club.
Oh, yes, yeah, men's shed. Yeah, 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 absolutely.
And
but
actually...
It's a hobby, it's a farm. It's the pigeons have to be kept perfect.
Right.
And if they're not kept perfect, you know, it's not right. You mm-hmm. have to keep them right.
Okay.
You know, but everybody that has pigeons that I know, they are number one. Everything is works around them. And they are perfect. They're looked after better than children, I think.
Oh,
you know?
God, that's some statement, Tony, you're making there.
Yeah, they are.
Now, I would like to speak to you. Our time is running out. Time flies when you're having fun, as they say. You're part of a very famous boxing family, Dublin family, called the Ingalls. Sorry. Have you got a radio on somewhere, Tony? I'm getting dreadful feedback. No, okay.
No.
I'll try and get somebody in to see if we can fix that. From a boxing family, your famous brothers Jimmy Ingle and Brendan Ingle. Can you just tell us briefly a little bit what that was like growing up in a family of professional boxers?
Well, there was 15 of us, and there was 24 years in the difference between me and my eldest brother Jimmy, and he won the European Championships in 1939. I wasn't born; I was born in 44,
mm-hmm.
and. It's a huge, huge difference. And then my brother Brendan, he went away to Sheffield, and he trained 5 or 6 world champions and European champions and British champions. And then I had another brother, Bernie, and he went to Canada and he won the Canadian title over there. And then I had another brother, Nago, he played for Dublin in the football, and another brother, Christy, he played for Shelburne. So they were a very athletic family.
That's amazing. And you did have a gym in your back garden, is that right?
We did. My father built a gym in the back garden, and he got sacks from the post office and filled it with wheat for a heavy bag and rags for a soft bag. And then he got a floor to ceiling punch ball, and then he got a ceiling bag. He had everything right, and he was an absolute genius. Really a brilliant fella.
He sounds,
you know,
like
he and my brother-in-law, he was a swimmer, and he puts everything down to him, Paul Emmett, that only for Charlie Ingle he wouldn't be where he was. He won the Liffey Swim. He's Iron Man. He was absolutely fantastic man.
It sounds like you had great grounding, you know, from the beginning, and that's how you're the success that you are, Tony. You had good people around you, and your dad was very committed to looking after you all and making sure that you were fit and healthy, and you had a hobby as well as a career, and, you know, how to work and make money. You know, the basic things that we need to survive in this world.
We had great parents, absolutely brilliant parents. On my birthday, I think about my mother. She had every birth she had was a home birth, and how she had them, I don't know. It's brilliant.
15 children, and it was probably a very small house.
There was 2 bedrooms.
So how did that work out?
There was in one room there was 2 sets of bunks of 3. And there were 6 of us there, and then there was a double bed in the middle, and there was 3 of us sleeping there. So there was 9 boys sleeping in one room, and then my mother and father slept in the back room, and then my sisters slept downstairs in the parlour.
That's just
and
kind
that
of
was it.
Unimaginable in today's
and one
times.
Bathroom.
One bathroom. God, I'm having.
But before that, they lived in Southwest Road and Penrose Street, and that was only. One room and 2 bedrooms, that's all. It was only 1 up and 2 down, or 1 down and 2 up, and the toilet was on the outside. There was no bath. There was a din bath that you had a bath in front of the fire. And how they survived is beyond me, really. And that was 10 children, mother and father, and granny and grandfather, living in that house, you know, two bedrooms and one sitting room and an outside toilet. That was 10, 12, 14 people living in this tiny house. Tiny. The yard was about 12 feet wide and length. That's all it was.
Incredible.
And how they survived is beyond me. But they were super, super parents.
Mm-hmm. Excellent. Tony, our time has come, and maybe we'll get you back on to chat more about your such an interesting life. And I really thank you for taking the time out. I know you've had to close your shop for 20 minutes to chat to me, so I really appreciate that. And we'll chat to you again in the near future. And thank you very much for taking the time out.
No problem. Thanks very much for calling.
Not at all. And enjoy the rest of your day, Tony. Take care.
I will indeed. Thank you. Bye-bye.
Bye.